Chapter 18. "Your candidate has been elected," Verger said over breakfast.
"Yes," Luke answered.
"Congratulations."
Luke looked toward Mara, who was busy with the apartment's comm unit. It was more Mara's doing than mine. She kept Cal alive long enough to give his acceptance speech.
"Still," Verger said, "you played a public role in his campaign."
"True."
"You realize that you and the Jedi will have to pay later for this political involvement?"
Luke nodded. "I know.
Just so you are prepared."
Luke tasted his glass of blue milk with a wistful yearning for the fresh, more richly flavored variety he'd enjoyed on his Uncle Owen Lars's moisture farm. Mara rose from the comm unit, came to the table, and laid out several holos that had been transmitted from the hidden Jedi installation in the Maw.
"New images of Ben."
Luke gazed at the holos with his usual mixture of delight and longing. Infants developed so rapidly at Ben's age that Luke could plainly see how the boy had grown and changed in the short time since he'd been sent to safety in the Maw. He was walking now, with greater and greater confidence. He was speaking, too, though at the moment his vocabulary seemed to consist mainly of the word knee. At such moments, Luke's misery at Ben's absence outweighed his thankfulness that Ben was in a place of safety. Luke and Mara showed the holos to Verger, who looked at them with quizzical eyes.
"A handsome human child," she said, "as best as I understand these things."
"And strong in the Force," Mara said. "That's been clear from the beginning." Verger's crest sleeked back.
"Perhaps that is misfortune," she said.
Luke stared at her in surprise.
"Verger," he said. "You permit Jedi to marry," Verger said, "and permit not only marriage but children. By your example, Luke Skywalker."
Luke tried to contain his surprise. "In your day," he said, "Jedi were chosen as infants. They were raised knowing they wouldn't marry. But I had to recruit Jedi who were already grown, who had already established relationships."
"It is very dangerous," Verger said. "What if Jedi were forced to choose between their duty and their family?"
Luke had made that choice more than once, and was comfortable with the necessity. "Family makes a Jedi more of a whole person," he said.
"It makes them less than Jedi," Verger said.
Her head swung toward Mara on the end of its long neck.
"And your child is strong in the Force. That is worse."
Mara's green eyes glittered dangerously.
"And how is that, Verger?" she asked. "Your Ben is heir to more than your husband's name. He is Darth Vader's grandchild," Verger said. "3 generations now of Skywalkers, all strong in the Force. This is a Jedi dynasty."
Verger's head swung back toward Luke.
"Can't you see how governments will view this as a threat? Once it is possible for Jedi to leave their power to their children, the balance that exists between government and Jedi falls."
Luke held up one of the holos of Ben. "This is a threat? In a universe with the Yuuzhan Vong in it?" Roger's crest sleeked back again, and she made a hissing noise that raised the hairs on the back of Luke's neck. He almost wanted to snatch the holo of Ben from the danger. The door chime sounded. Through a gentle Force projection coming from the other side, Luke knew that the visitor was Silgal, come to collect Verger for another healing tutorial. When Verger wasn't being debriefed by Fleet Intelligence, a process still ongoing, she had been perfectly amenable to spending time with Silgal, teaching the Mon Calamari healer the art of making herself small. Perhaps Silgal, too, would learn to heal with her tears, and then the two could pass the knowledge on to others. At the sound of the chime, Verger gazed stonily at Luke for a moment, then hopped off her chair.
"I must go," she said, "but I beg you, young master, to think of this."
She padded to the door and let herself out. Luke looked at Mara. "What do we think?" he asked. Mara reached for a knife. She began cutting up dried bofa fruit and adding it to a dried, crunchy form of moon calamari seaweed eaten by the locals.
"Maybe she's embittered over 50 years of loneliness," Mara said. "But I call that an overreaction."
"Yes.
Verger is too smart, too perceptive, too enigmatic."
Her green eyes flashed.
"Too willing to torture young humans to get what she wants.
I don't want her ever to get near Ben."
"Agreed," Luke said. "I've checked the Jedi holocron. There was a Jedi named Verger 50 years ago, a former apprentice of a master,
Thresha Cholim."
Mara's knife made neat little paring motions.
"There would be, wouldn't there, if she was an infiltrator?"
"It's awfully roundabout to infiltrate the Jedi by way of the Yuuzhan Vong."
Mara put down her knife.
"Maybe she was a Jedi. The question is, after 50 years with the Vong, what is she now?"
Luke had no answer. "She doesn't feel dark," he said.
"She doesn't feel anything. She's practically invisible. We only sense what she wants us to sense."
"Are you going to play spy today?"
"Neely Kirk can handle the enemy networks on his own today, if you have another idea. Do you?"
"I have a Jedi Council to put together," Luke said. "I thought you might help me."
Mara smiled.
"We get to spend the day gossiping about our colleagues and calling it work.
I'm willing." He leaned over and kissed her cheek. "I knew I could count on you," he said.
"Ruined. Ruined."
War Master Savongla gazed in revulsion over the square of sacrifice, where the great formations of Yuuzhan Vong, each in formal robes, had been assembled to witness the painful, extended death of more than 100 captives, all for the glory of Yun Yuuzhan, whose great temple was being dedicated on this day. Many of the captives were of high rank, military officers or senators captured in the battle for Yuuzhan Tar. Their lives had been carefully preserved just for this moment. They had been strapped to their execution beds, and the priests stood by with their flesh-eating beetles and their flaying knives. The symphony of the captives' screams would have risen for many hours to the delighted ears of the god. But instead, it was ruined. While Supreme Overlord Shimra stood on the steps of the temple, the high priest of Yun Yuuzhan had gone into his extended blessing, hands raised over the thousands assembled to watch the work. And then a pestilential odor swept over the assembly, and the squares of formed Yuuzhan Vong began to eddy as something crept among them. The square was being flooded by a noxious liquid, something spewed up from beneath ground level. The muck spread through the crowd, but the Yuuzhan Vong were disciplined and remained in their ranks, plucking up the hems of their cloaks to keep them out of the ooze. The rank fluid was composed of every kind of waste. Below ground level lived the Maulur, who digested the sewage produced by the growing city. But apparently something had upset their omnivorous stomachs, and they were regurgitating onto the square. The high priest's voice hesitated, resumed, hesitated again. He wheezed as a gust of wind brought a wave of stench to his nostrils. The high priest managed to renew his prayers, but Shimra's booming voice cut him short.
"The sacrifice is spoiled. Dismiss the onlookers and kill the captives."
The high priest turned to face the Supreme Overlord. "Are you certain, Dread One?"
Shimra gave a savage laugh. "Unless you think that sewage is deep enough to drown our victims in."
The high priest looked out over the flooded square. "I don't believe so, Supreme One."
"Then order your people to kill the captives."
Shimra turned on his heel to enter the temple.
"The rest of you, follow me."
Savongla followed his overlord into the shadowed green and purple depths of the temple, where the air smelled properly of heavy organics. Shimra seemed more thoughtful than angry, which Savongla thought was not a good sign. It might mean the rage would burst out later, and in an unpredictable direction. At least the Dread One wasn't accompanied today by his Shadow Onimi, as the presence of a shamed one at a sacrifice this grand would have been an insult to the gods.
"Another failure,"
Shimmer growled. "Another public failure, witnessed again by thousands of our people, and by our chief god."
"Treachery, Supreme One," someone called. "Sabotage by this so-called underground."
"Or by heretics," said a priest, loyal to his leader, Jakan.
"I have 6 remaining Voxen, Dreadlord," Savangla said. "Let me take 1 or 2 out. And if there are Jedi involved in this business, the Voxen will find them and tear them."
Shimmer looked left and right. His burning eyes turned yellow, then red as they settled on Numanor.
"You have received no reports of underground activity?" he demanded.
Savangla rejoiced at Shimmer turning to Numanor with this question. After Numanor's attempt to brand him with the catastrophe of Roger, any discomfort in Numanor could only be to Savangla's delight.
"No reports, Supreme One," Numanor said. Numanor almost wilted beneath the fierce glare of Shimra's macaque implants. But Shimra again chose to withhold his anger, and his savage look again turned thoughtful.
"We know the world brain has been contaminated by that fool Chagong Hul," Shimmer said. "Could this be another manifestation of the Shaper's incompetence?"
No one dared to either confirm or deny this supposition.
"It's almost as if the world brain has developed a nasty sense of humor," Shimmer said thoughtfully. "Onimi won't care for that. He much prefers being the only one permitted to make jokes."
No one commented on that either. The Supreme Overlord turned to one of his assistants.
"Find a Shaper to die for this."
"I will, Supreme One."
Numanor seemed to sag with relief once he realized that the Shaper class was going to get the blame for the botched sacrifice. Savangla snarled at him. "Next time, filth," he thought. Shimra's glowing, restless eyes swept again over the company, then settled on Savangla. The War Master straightened, then bowed from the waist, keeping his back rigid.
"Dreadlord," he said.
"Your forces eliminated an enemy cruiser at small cost to themselves. Vengeance for Kam Karsh, though a small one."
Savangla took a grip on his courage. "With your permission, Supreme One, I will exact vengeance in full. Give me permission to take the fleet and—"
"No, War Master."
"Give me a decisive battle, Supreme One. Let the infidel's blood fill the spaces between the stars." The words sprayed from the War Master's slashed lips.
"Be silent."
Savangla threw himself to the ground before the Supreme Overlord's feet. "I obey," he said. There was a moment of awful emptiness in which Savangla contemplated his own immediate death. Then the silence was broken by an unexpected voice.
"With respect, Supreme One," Numanor said, "I agree that a decisive battle must be fought, and soon." Astonishment filled Savangla's soul, followed immediately by suspicion. Numanor couldn't be agreeing with Savangla out of sympathy for his position. This had to be some plot, some devious scheme by the executor to discredit him. To Savangla's surprise, Shimmer restrained his anger.
"Your reasons, executor?" he asked.
"We aren't growing any stronger, Supreme One," Numanor said. "As soon as our auxiliaries are in place, and the fleet is at full strength, we must seek to bring about a decisive engagement that will win the war."
Mockery entered Shimra's tones.
"I thought the Battle of Jujantar was supposed to be the decisive engagement that would win the war."
Numanor hesitated.
"The infidels have proved more adaptable than we suspected."
Savangla stepped in.
"We shouldn't waste our strength on an offensive for its own sake. If we choose the right moment, however, the right target, if we can catch their forces at a disadvantage, then we can smash them beyond recovery."
The mockery continued.
"How can we choose such a time, such a target?"
"We must depend on accurate intelligence of the enemy,"
Supreme One, Nomanor said. Shimra laughed. On you, then. All hail, Nomanor. This victory depends on you, who has just lost a pair of valuable agents in a bungled assassination.
Nomanor wisely chose not to rise to the mockery. Assassination is always a risky business, Supreme One. Agents may be risked in this way, but no chances should be taken with the fleet.
Very well, then.
Shimra hesitated.
Rise, War Master.
Samung La got to his feet, his clawed Vuasa foot scrabbling for traction on the chitinous temple floor. He looked at Nomanor and tried to mask his resentment. Shimra looked from one to the other.
War Master, you will have your decisive battle after the fleet is ready, but you will not launch the battle blindly. You will wait for Nomanor's spies to report that the time is ripe, and my own permission will be required. Do you understand?
Completely, Supreme One.
Savong La bowed in submission. A smile twisted across Shimra's features.
It seems that the two of you are bound together once again. The fate of one will depend entirely on the fate of the other. If success comes to one, it will come to both. But if one fails...
He left the thought unfinished. Savong La straightened and looked at the executor, who he found looking back at him. Savong La let a smile spread across his slashed lips.
At least if I fall, he thought at him, I may rejoice in the thought that you will not long survive me.
Though it was not comfortable to think that Nomanor was probably thinking the very same thing.
I want Sildal, Luke said. I want a healer. The fact that she's an ambassador is a bonus.
He and Mara were in their apartment trying to choose 5 Jedi to serve with Luke on the new Jedi Council. In the background, a live hollow of Cal Omis was giving his acceptance speech before the Senate. With sorrow for our countless dead, but with hope for the future, Cal was saying. With sadness for the many who have fallen, but with confidence in the many who have taken their place.
Sildal, Mara said, very well.
Luke looked at her. Who I really want, he said, is you. Mara's green eyes sparkled.
I'm always flattered to hear that.
For the council, I mean, Luke said. As of course in every other way. But a Jedi Master can't appoint his wife to government jobs without people disapproving.
You'll get my advice anyway, Mara said. You won't be able to avoid it.
She looked at the list they'd compiled.
Who's next?
How about Kenth Hamner? He has the contacts and the knowledge. Mara nodded and entered the name on her datapad.
Hamner's in, then.
She looked up.
Kem Solisar? Or Teon?
It would be good to have someone representing the Jedi Academy. Put them down as maybes. If we weren't at war, I'd put one of them on the council for certain, but right now, we may need a council oriented more toward action.
Then why Sildal?
Luke looked at her. Healing is important. Mara held his gaze, then nodded.
Of course.
Saba Sebatine. She commands an all-Jedi squadron and brings all the Barabels on board. She's proved herself many times over, and it's time she had a higher profile. Saba hadn't been trained at the Jedi Academy, but on Barab 1 by the Jedi Master Elissa. Saba, in turn, had recruited and trained a whole pack of her fellow Barabels, most of whom formed her Wild Knights squadron.
You've thought about this pretty thoroughly, haven't you?
Mara said. I do my best. She gave a sly smile.
Maybe Cal is right. You are turning into a politician.
Luke affected horror and made a warding gesture. Mara laughed.
My only objection is that Saba is a knight, she said, not a master.
Knights should have some representation on the council, too.
Mara looked at her data pad. Saba's representing a lot of people. Knights, Barabels, and an all-Jedi squadron. Then it's all the more important that she have a seat. With compassion for the millions of our dispossessed, Cal's Hollow was saying, with firmness in the rightness of our cause. Mara shrugged and made a mark by Saba's name.
Streen, she suggested.
A maybe. Trasina Lobi?
She'd be good.
From the Hollow came Cal's voice. I accept the Senate's nomination to be Chief of State of the New Republic. Roars followed and applause.
That was a good speech, Mara said.
It was. Luke glanced thoughtfully at the Hollow Cal, listening respectfully to the Senate's applause. You know, I'm beginning to have a lot of sympathy for Cal. He's got to fill seats not only on the Jedi Council, but in all the government departments as well.
He has more practice at this sort of thing than we do.
Let's hope so. Luke glanced at Mara's data pad and the list of names. Let's add one more, my most controversial nominee. Mara turned her eyes to him in rising horror.
Not Kip Duron.
Luke returned her gaze, then gave a deliberate nod. For what it's worth, he said, I think that Kip's actions at Hapes and Borlias show that he's a much more stable person than he was. He seems to have made peace with himself. Remember, he renounced pride on Ithor, and since then he voluntarily put himself under Jaina's command. He's always supported the idea of a Jedi Council.
You're setting yourself up for a lot of grief.
Wouldn't it be more grievous to have a Kip running around loose where the Council can't control him? Luke said. Remember, he's only one vote. If he takes an independent line, he'll be outvoted by the rest, and then he'll be obliged to support the majority.
I think you have a very generous idea of Kip's sense of obligation.
Plus, Mara considered,
how do you know he'll be outvoted?
There are going to be 6 non-Jedi on the Council now. What if Kip's arguments make sense to them? If Kip's arguments make sense to 6 political appointees, then I'd better pay more attention to those arguments than I have been. Mara gave him a skeptical look.
I think you're going to regret this.
Luke shrugged. I may. I probably will. But if a person in authority talks only to those who agree with him, he soon finds himself out of authority.
Mara sighed. You are a politician, she said.
Luke presented his nominees for the Jedi Council to Cal Omis the next morning. Cal leaned back in his office chair. The office smelled of fresh paint and newly laid carpet. Looked at the list and gave Luke a skeptical look. Kip Duron? He said.
Kip has changed, Luke said.
He hasn't blown up any planets in a few years, that's true.
That wasn't precisely Kip who did that, Luke said. He was possessed by the spirit of a long-dead Sith lord named Exar Kun.
Cal shook his head, and when he spoke his voice had a mournful air.
That's exactly the sort of thing I hope never to have to explain to a senatorial committee, he said.
Luke looked at Cal in concern. Should I withdraw the nomination? I don't want to wreck our chances of reestablishing the Jedi Council. Cal considered, then shook his head.
No, he said. I understand why you did it.
It's best to have the opposition inside the tent where you can keep an eye on them. That's why I'm putting some of Thalia's old faction on the advisory council. And Fjord Rodan, if you'll agree. He looked at Luke. And you?
Surprise rose in Luke. Are you sure? He asked. Don't you think Leia would be better?
Maybe. But Leia hasn't returned from Bastion, and you're here.
Luke smiled. You're going to keep me so busy running to meetings that I'm not going to have time for anything else.
Would that be a bad thing? Cal asked. Does the head of the Jedi Order need to be blowing up Death Stars and engaging in lightsaber fights at his age?
Luke smiled. I haven't blown up a Death Star in ages.
That's what your young folks are for, Cal said. If you put me back in a starfighter, I'd feel like an idiot.
I doubt that very much, Luke said.
Maybe I exaggerate.
Cal smiled.
I'm appointing myself to the Jedi Council, by the way. I had hoped you would. And Tribach, a senatorial representative. The Senate will need to confirm that, but I don't think we'll have any trouble. Difskar, the Chief of Intelligence. Someone from the Justice Council. I haven't worked out just who as yet. Reliki Akla, who will also head the Ministry of State. Her uncle was a Jedi, I know. You don't have any of Thalia's people, or Fuhr Rodan's. I know, Cal smiled. They'll have to be satisfied with seats on the Advisory Council, won't they? You haven't mentioned the Sixth. Sin Sov, as head of the military. He looked troubled. If I decide to retain him. He offered me his resignation practically the second I finished my acceptance speech. Luke gave Cal a serious look. You need to call on Akbar. Cal looked curious. To be Supreme Commander? No, but you need to talk to him. He has a plan to deal with the Yuuzhan Vong. I'll talk to him very soon, Cal. Luke warned. You know how good he is. Cal nodded again. Fine. Soon. The voice of Cal's comm droid came from the speakers on his desk. Senator Rodan is here for his appointment. Cal rose. I shouldn't keep Fuhr waiting. He escorted Luke to the door, allowing the Jedi Master to precede him into the outer office. Fuhr Rodan stood there, wearing a stainless gray suit and a cold demeanor. Luke gave him a polite nod, but Rodan only returned a glare. I see you have the compliant Chief of State required by your plans, he said. I don't believe you ever asked me my plans, Luke said. You only assumed you knew them. You interfered, Rodan said. You and your wife did something to my supporters. We did nothing of the sort, Luke said. Then it was your pirate friends. Do you deny that? I deny that I have pirate friends, Luke said mildly, and I have no idea what my other friends may have done, if anything. Jedi virtue, Rodan said. You remain stainless while your friends do the dirty work. I couldn't help but notice that your friends' droids are guarding the Chief of State whom they created. The YVH droids in the corridor belong to the government, Cal Omis said. You voted for the appropriation yourself, Fuhr. Fuhr Rodan turned his scornful eye toward Cal. I thought you had more pride than to sell yourself to a bunch of renegades and their witch-doctor accomplices, he said. I refuse to have anything to do with supporting the illusion that your government is anything but illegitimate. I'll thank you to keep my name off any list of appointees. He turned stiff-spined, and marched out. Luke and Cal looked at each other. "Stickier than I thought," Cal said.